Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Hi everybody, welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast, proudly sponsored by GoToMeeting. Well, my name's Rob, and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the wonderful world of photography. We're up to episode 192, and it's the 20th of May, 2012. Well, I think the weather forecasters have said this is the worst or the coldest May on record for the UK. I'm looking out the window and what time is it? It's 20 past 8 in the evening. There's still a little bit of light, but it's very grey. It's been really cold, but luckily I was able to get out yesterday for about an hour and take some photographs. So I thought what I'd do today is talk a little bit about what I've been up to during the week and this little kind of photo walk that I did, and maybe some techniques you can use for kind of getting into the zone, getting into a position where your photography starts to flow freely and you can overcome that inertia that often comes when you go out to start shooting. Just a couple of ideas. But first off, right, so what have I been up to this week? Well, it's a Sunday. Car boot this morning, and I was pretty excited because you remember last week I picked up a couple of cheap Yong Nuo flashes on the cheap speed lights. I got two for 20 quid, and as soon as I got home and tested them and played around with them, I was like, oh man, these are great. Much better than the old flashes I was using with my wireless flash system. For two reasons, the Yong Nuo's have their own optical slave system as well, so you don't have to muck around with a wireless flash, and I know that isn't always a good thing place to be, but the recycle time's really fast, much faster than the old Jessup's flash and the old Miranda flash I've been using with my wireless flash system. You know, literally you can take a shot, bang at full power, and sort of 5 seconds later the flash is ready to go again. Where I think with the old Jessup 360AF, you've got to wait about 30 seconds for it to fire up again. So I thought, well, two flashes is great. And if you use the slave factor of those flashes, I could use the onboard flash from my 350D as like a fill, or just like a commander unit, to be honest. And then I could fire two of those flashes, the two I got, for like a main and a fill. I thought, wouldn't it be great to have one more? Because if I had one more, then I could also have like a backlight, like a hair light or a light for lighting out the background. And then I also thought, well, and then what I could also do, if I still use my wireless flashes, I could have my wireless flash on top of the camera. That could fire the two older flashes, so that's two. So I could have a main and a fill. And then I could have one of these Yong Nuo's doing the hair light, one of them doing the backlight. And lo and behold, but anyway, so I thought, I wonder if those guys are going to be there at the car boot at Bridgemary again this morning. So I dragged Suzanne out of bed, because although she's the one who's normally really keen to go, she wasn't that keen this morning, she was quite tired. So, no, come on, let's go. And they were there, and they didn't have any of the, I think, was it the 480s I had last week? But they had the Yong Nuo 560s, which is the next one up. But they wanted a little bit more money for these. They were £20 each, so I only bought one. So, and the difference with the Yong Nuo 560 is that it Again, they're fully manual flashes. You know, you can just turn the power up and down. And then they have the two, they have manual mode and then the two slave modes. But the 560 also has a motorized zoom on it. So what that means is you can focus the flash into a tighter beam if you're aiming at something that's further away. So they said, oh yeah, we want £20 for these. I was like, I'll have one then. They're good lads down there, so I want to see what they've got next week. But I'm not going to buy any more flashes. I've got enough now. Because I don't use them very much anyway. So, but that was good. Look for some more off-camera stuff at runonphoto.com soon. And obviously reviews of those flashes as well. But I think what I'm going to do, it's my birthday next month. So what I've told Suzanne is that you take that flash and wrap it up and give it to me as my birthday present. And I'll have that and a cake. I've also this week had a go at the photo assignments. You may recall last week I set a couple of new ones to do two at the same time, depending if you had nice weather or not. One called From a Blank Canvas, which could be anything from a still life through to something like, I don't know, a situation where you are setting up the photo completely, you know, a conceptual image. And the other kind of theme to work off was one called The Kiss of the Sun. The idea with it actually getting sunny now, where we can actually take some pictures of nice things. And I did a still life of some vegetables in our kitchen, and I captured like the shadow of a hanging bench that we have in our back garden as well. But I'm very pleased to say there's loads of work gone into the Flickr group already. Joe's done some great ones, conceptual photos of like a little mannequin that he's put in different situations. Looks really cool, telling stories. Danny B's done some great ones of Transformers. Canon and Dav has done some nice flowers. Rod's done a nice reflection one of a tree, very, very nice indeed, and some great flowers in his back garden as well. And, you know, a classic look, you know, when you're trying to get these shots into the sun. Rod's done this great one where, you know, you play with lens flare. Lens flare is your friend. It gives you that vintage, retro, warm look that when you look at the photograph and you see lens flare and glare and a dropping contrast, but an increase in the warmth of a photograph, it really adds to the feeling immensely. So that's some really good stuff going in there. So if you haven't done already, join the Flickr photo group. Come on over. It's all for free. It's all for fun. It's just all about practicing, and it's good stuff over there. Now, before I talk about our main subject and word from our sponsors, which is GoToMeeting online conference calls. Because we develop trust in the people we know, but we don't really know someone we can't see. And this can be a tough hurdle in business with employees and clients around the world. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It's a simple online meeting service with Droop high definition video. It helps you get better connected to the people you depend on for success. So how does it work? Well, with GoToMeeting by Citrix, it just takes a webcam and a click to instantly collaborate with your team or clients in real time from anywhere in the world, even on the go from an iPad. It helps build trust, confidence, and makes meetings more effective. We used GoToMeeting for a while before we started using it as a sponsor on the Tech Podcast Network, and it really is very good indeed. You can start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting, and all my listeners can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait. Go visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for sponsoring the SCL Photography Podcast. Excuse me, I'm still a bit sniffly, and I've got a cup of coffee here to keep me awake as I go on through the podcast. So, Fort Fair and Photo Walk. It's been a busy week at work, as always. I always say that, don't I? Every week, working 6 day weeks. But I had a day off on a Saturday, which was quite unusual. And we went shopping in the morning, did some DIY around lunchtime. And in the afternoon, everything had quieted down a bit. Oliver was upstairs with one of his mates playing on the Xbox. Suzanne was downstairs doing some baking. And she said, well, why don't you go out with your camera for an hour? And I looked outside, and it was fairly nice weather. It was fairly sunny, not too bright. And I thought, oh, great, brilliant, but where do I go? You know, in an hour, I can't go too far. So I checked on my phone of, like, the shop list of stuff that I wanted to do, but most of it was too far away. Nothing close, you know, and I've shot lots of the really close areas around here to death, like Fort Brockhurst and things like that. And I wanted to go somewhere different. And I was racking my brain. I suddenly thought of Fort Fairham, which is... Yeah, you know, I've talked about Fort Brockhurst a lot, which is the Victorian fort, literally sort of 250 yards away from my front door, which is a well-preserved example of a Victorian fort. Well, Gosport is surrounded by a whole slew of these forts, but not many of them are well-preserved at all. And Fort Fairham hasn't been preserved at all on the outside, but what they've done with the inside is converted it into like an industrial park with buildings and retail. There's sort of industrial units. There's even a formal hire place as well. And I kind of drive past it sometimes on the way to work, the entrance. And there's also this, it's surrounded by woodland. And there's also this like cutting where people come out, obviously walking their dogs. And I thought, I wonder what's down there. I wonder if there's like a walk around the moat. So I thought, oh, cool. So I head on up there. And I thought, also on a Saturday afternoon, being an industrial place, it's probably going to be pretty empty. So I headed up to Newgate Lane, parked in one of the retail superstores car parks up there, threw my camera on my shoulder with my 350D and had my low-pro photo runner bag on me as well, with my 55-250 and my 18-55 on me, and headed over there. And straight away, you know, what I like to do, as soon as I get started on a photo walk, is make sure you've got your camera out and just take some pictures of whatever. It doesn't have to be brilliant, but just something to get your shooting. And then I came up to the industrial park, and there was an interesting chair outside. In fact, if you go to robnunphoto.com and look for the show notes for SCL192, which will be on the front if you're watching this in the next week or so, you can kind of follow my journey. I've put a few of the photographs in the show notes for SCL192. And there was like this leather chair outside, and I took a photograph of that. Came inside, and you could see parts of the old fort, like the ramparts around the outside, if you can imagine. And there were some stairs which I climbed up, and it was quite exciting. And then up on top you have these things called, I think they're called casemates, which are like the bunkers for the guns. And there was a hole and this ladder going down, so I kind of gingerly poked my camera down there and took some photographs with the flash. I'm not very good with heights though, so as I was coming back to go down this steps, so I was probably about 50 feet up, I said, woo, not too good. And I was just walking around looking for angles and compositions. I think it was fairly interesting, nothing brilliant, but it was fairly interesting. So I headed out of the interior and then saw the sign that said Fort Fairham Walk, and it was sort of this path leading off into the bushes. I thought, oh, this should be interesting. So I started walking down it, and it was just like woodland with this hard path in the middle. And on my right, you could see down into where the moat would have been, and there was still lots of water down there, but it looked pretty stagnant, and there was just trees everywhere. You couldn't see. At Fort Brockhurst, if you look across the moat, you can see the fort, because it's not overgrown, but here it was completely overgrown. You couldn't see anything at all, so I was like, you know, I'll walk along a little bit and see what I find. So I carried on walking along, and there was some interesting, like, fern leaves that I took a shot of, and there was a wheelbarrow, I think, in a clearing, which I took a photo of, and then some interesting dead trees. And then I kept going on and on and on, and then I realised that the path was going to be going all the way around the fort, it was quite a long way. It was a lot longer than the path that's around Fort Brockhurst, so I can only imagine that the earthworks probably the grounds, if you like, that the fort was in, include a lot of the earthworks that stick out in front of these forts. And if you ever want to see what they're like, if you go on Google Earth, okay, or Google Maps probably works as well, and go to the hybrid view, go to the satellite view, and then just type in Gosport UK, and so it spins to there. If you zoom out a reasonable amount of distance, if you just look at the satellite image, you'll see coming out on the left-hand side of Gosport from the sea around in an arc from, say, round about 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock. If you look carefully, you'll see these fortifications. And some of them you can actually see walls and things, but in others you'll just see the trees in these shapes. And they're almost, how can I describe it? They're a bit like, they're all pointing outwards from Gosport, because they're all designed to defend Portsmouth, which is the big naval dockyard. And the idea was that if somebody invaded and landed further inland, the danger was that they wouldn't actually have to attack Portsmouth. All they would have to do is get close and then fire their guns into the dockyard to destroy the ship. So in order to prevent this, you built these forts to stop people getting closer. But you can see these forts, and where the forts have been dismantled or in ruins, that the outlines of the earthworks are still there, and in the way that the trees have grown. And so you can see them. But the forts themselves, with the moats and the bricks, were only part of it. In front of each fort, you also had these massive earthworks of these triangles that kind of like sandbag, if you like, but massive, that go out in a point. So the idea was that you would have lots of troops along there as well, firing at any potential attackers. And then when the attackers got too close, the troops would then retreat across bridges into the fort and then start firing their guns from there. So to cut a long story short, it was a long walk. So as I was coming round, and I guess I got near to the top of the fort, you could see like brickwork through the foliage, and I was taking shots. But there was this other bit where one of the main casemates, which is like this bit that sticks out into the moat, and the idea of this bit that sticks out into the moat is if the enemy attacker has boats and try and cross the moat, the bit that's sticking out into the moat can then has cannons that fire along the moat to destroy them. You could see this bit, and I looked down and I could see the fact that there wasn't much of the moat left. It was only like a little trickle. So I kind of thought, oh, let's go and do a bit of exploring. So I kind of skidded down the muddy slopes. It's been raining an awful lot here recently. Got down to the bottom, and I only had my trainers on, my sneakers on. And so I kind of, you know, tiptoed across, and there was bricks that I could use as stepping stones, and got round to the side of this casemate, this big brick structure that was obviously all falling apart. But it was really good. It was really eerie. It was somebody, there was loads of graffiti on there, but it was dead quiet. All there was the sound of birds tweetering away. And as I kind of explored, there's like these big lumps of concrete that had obviously fallen out from the side of the fort. And it was almost like, you know, you come across these ancient ruins in this forest. Very, very good indeed. Very, very eerie. And I kind of explored and took some shots, and it really made my day. I thought, oh, this is just pretty brilliant. Really enjoyed it. But, you know, I understand the fact that I only had, you know, an hour or so. So I took some more shots and then climbed back up to the path on the side of the moat and kind of carried on going round the fort. And there was actually another couple of areas where I could have probably got down and explored, but, you know, I knew I was up against the clock. But so I know I'll definitely be going back and take some photos there. And who knows, I might even take some flashes and do some off-camera flash work outside as well. And then so I got home, had a quick coffee, edited the images in Picasa, and uploaded them to Flickr. And again, you can probably see them in my photo stream at the moment. And it was a really enjoyable photo walk because it was a new location. It was an exciting place to go. I came out some okay pics, and I got some good exercise as well. It was all done in about an hour. But when I was kind of trying to think of things to talk about in the podcast this week, I thought, you know, it's very easy to get something almost like a photographer's block, isn't it? To wander around with your camera in your bag or in your pocket, and you think, oh, no, that's not worth taking a photo of, or that's not, you know, the light's not quite right, or no, that's not good, or there's too many people around, I'd be a bit embarrassed, I'd feel a bit uncomfortable if I got my camera around. But what I'm saying is, you know, when you do feel like that, the first thing you've got to do is realise that what you're doing is a good hobby, it's interesting, and you're recording things for posterity, and you're a photographer. People have done it for the last 150 years, it's fine, it's okay, it's a good thing to do. So first thing I say is, when you start a photo walk, get your kit out. get your camera kit on. And if you feel a bit self-conscious, especially if you're using a big SLR, what I would say is one of the best things I've ever used is those R straps, which is the camera strap, which is a bit like a bandolier. So your strap goes across your chest diagonally, and your camera hangs on your hip. And it's a bit out of the way, and you can kind of hide it with your hand. So it's not obvious that you've got this big SLR hanging around your neck, or compact camera, stuff like that. And as I said at the beginning of the podcast, what you've got to do is straight away start shooting. Just start taking pictures of anything, because that will loosen up your trigger finger, and it will get your eye looking for subjects. Even if it's of things you know you won't keep, the act of just getting your camera out and clicking away, dropping down to one knee, finding an angle, it starts getting you into that zone where you're forgetting your uncomfortableness, your uneasiness, your unwillingness to take photos, and you'll start looking for the shots and actually capturing them. And then what you've got to do is just make sure you follow that instinct. So if there's a road you think, oh, that looks interesting, maybe it looks more interesting than where you were going to go, follow that impulse, go down there, take that picture of that subject. And by doing this, you're developing your gut feeling, even, you know, by following your gut feeling and your impulse, and that will guide you towards great photographs, and you'll end up, you know, regretting the shots you've missed if you don't, and you'll regret the photographs that could have been if you don't scratch that itch, if you don't follow that impulse. So that's my kind of little nugget at the end of my story about my Fort Ferron photo walk. You know, if we don't follow that photographic impulse whenever we can, it will slowly ebb and slowly die away. So let's develop it. Let's take photographs when our gut says, that's a great shot, I need to press that shutter. Right, well, that's it for this week. Time for a few thanks. Thanks to everybody for taking part in the Flickr group. Fantastic work going on over there. Thanks to everybody for taking time to do comments to the robnarphoto.com blog. Very, very good. And especially people who have taken time to go to iTunes and put little reviews and stars on SEL on the iTunes review system. That is brilliant, the people who do that. Thank you very, very much. Thanks to Everyday Jones, and they do the intro and outro music. You can find their stuff for free download at everydayjones.com. But most of all, thanks to you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robnumphoto.com. Remember, you can email me with any questions, suggestions and ideas for the podcast or blog at scalespeeder@gmail.com. That's scalespeeder @gmail.com. But hopefully, pretty soon, I'll see you on Flickr.